Well, hello, DNCers, and last minute, we have a new guest on the show this week. Not a new guest, a new old guest. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Rockwell. This is very interesting. I'm used to talking to Sean, except I'm not used to talking to Sean, because the last time I was on the show was like almost 3 years ago now, which is kind of wild.
That's crazy. Episode 132, it looks like.
Yep, and this is 260. You're almost up to my record.
I'll chase you down.
You can get me any day now. But I've delayed it by one more week, so I'm happy.
All right. You can take the W on this one. Again, welcome. And for people who are more recent listeners of the show, give us a little intro, a little background, who you are, what you're doing, what you're working on, and we'll see where it takes us, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Paul Straw. I was one of the original co-hosts of the show with Sean Washington. We started this back in 2015, I guess. Yeah, in Santa Cruz. And I recorded 100-something episodes with him. And then it was just time for me to move on. I was burnt out. I had started a startup and it kind of didn't do the starting part of that. So that was pretty difficult. And we were working at the time as well, so we were talking every single day, and it was just kind of hard for me to actually get into the show. But it's great to be back. This is really fun. I'm excited. I'm glad Mr. Washington had to take a break.
Yeah, it was funny because it was really last minute, because I was bugging you in the Discord like, hey, when are we going to get you back on? And at the last minute, Sean had to step out, so pulled an audible and got you in here. So that was from concept to implementation, like 2 hours. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it worked out great. Absolutely no technical issues or any problems whatsoever.
Nothing to speak of, for sure.
But yeah, so in the meantime, let's see, what's been going on since I actually left the show? At the time, I was living in a van with my wife when we were traveling around the country. And I was also working, like I mentioned, I was working with Sean. So we talked every day at a company called Design Collective in Southern California. Eventually, after that, we ended up moving to Portland, so which is where we currently are now, where you see me if you're watching the stream, or where you're hearing me from if you're listening. And now, I ended up leaving Design Collective for a company called Metalab, which is a company that I have kind of obsessed over since I was what seems like lifetimes ago. And Sean is now there as well, so we're kind of back, kind of got the band back together.
It's now three companies in a row that you guys have worked together at?
Not quite in a row. Maybe not in a row. I guess in a row for Sean, though. Yeah. Wow. That's weird.
And it's not even like you even got it. Like, there was no connection even for the Metalab job. It just kind of worked out that way. Just crazy to me.
I recommended him, so I got the referral bonus and whatever. But I was absolutely not part of the interviewing process or anything, as I think is correct.
Cool.
Yeah, Metalab is actually really great about that kind of stuff. We go through procedures to anonymize Git commits when we're looking at code tests and that sort of thing to really make sure that the hiring process is as impartial as it can be.
Oh, that's interesting. That's cool. I didn't even know you could do that. I should do that for all my terrible commits.
Yeah, so I actually just wrote a little script for it. Basically, you just pass it a directory and an email to look for in commit messages, and then an email to replace it with, and a name to replace it with, and it just goes through and sanitizes everything on each branch.
Does that not screw up the hashes for the commits?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I don't remember. This was like a year ago.
Just wondering. That seems like anytime you touch Git, something's going to break, so...
Well, in this case, we don't really care about the hashes or anything, right? Because we're intentionally trying to obfuscate things, so.
Yeah, that's funny. Go back to the van thing for a sec. I just kind of skipped over that. You're living in a van, not down by the river, or maybe you were down by the river, I don't know.
Occasionally, you know.
Yeah, well, if you want it to be. I remember watching your videos on YouTube. It was cool to see the process of what that was like for you.
Yeah, so that was kind of a weird lark. That's something I got stuck in my head when I was, I don't know, 10 or 11 years old, right around there. Originally, I wanted to have a truck with one of those camper shells on it. And I was like, well, there's pretty much no reason there's nothing stopping me from doing this. I could still have all of my tech and do my job. I'm thinking this as an 11-year-old. I could still have all my tech and do my job just fine. But mostly the problem was batteries. And in the time between when I was 11 and when I was like 26, 27, when we got the van, battery technology, lithium became totally viable and was in everything. So that completely changed. And solar, of course, was also much more available. It was around right around 2 years. We had the van, and we had the van for longer than that. We still have the van, but right around 2 years that we lived in it full time while we were traveling. And it was a great experience. I mean, in retrospect, I would find it difficult to recommend, simply because I love having an actual office and workspace again. Like, that was the number one thing. Having a proper bathroom is amazing. It's great, but like, a workshop, you can't really beat it. You gotta have a space to let all those ideas come out of your head, right?
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that there, for me at least, there's always this struggle between, do I have too much stuff and I never know I'm gonna need it, right? There's that, you know, everyone has the box of AC adapters, right? Like, maybe half of them have like the connectors cut off. Like, you know, you never know. But yeah, I could, like, I could never give that up, like you said, having that space and the ability to just spread out and be able to put things down and know that they're going to be there when you go to pick them up later.
Yeah. So a huge chunk of what I brought with me in the van, like, I had an entire backpack full of cables, as you're describing. And a backpack doesn't sound like a whole lot, but when you're living in a 22-foot Sprinter van, like, that's a lot. That's a whole cabinet, basically.
It's like 1%. Yeah.
By volume, it's kind of ridiculous how fast it adds up. So almost everything I brought with me was stuff to make or repair things in the van. I had a few, you know, some clothes, and then just a bunch of tools and batteries and accessories and cables and whatever. I couldn't give you a percentage on, I probably could give you a percentage on how much of it I actually used, but it would be embarrassing, so I won't.
What? I mean, it seemed like the van was like constant repairs. Anyways. You learned a lot about RV, not maintenance, but just lack of quality control or something, right?
Yeah. So a little bit of background on that. Our van is a 2006 Mercedes Sprinter, but it was initially built by a company called Leisure Travel. And they do pretty nice work. They're one of the actually higher end makers in that space. But my takeaway from that was definitely even the higher end makers in the RV space are just garbage. It was so bad. The workmanship was ridiculously shoddy. Nothing was level or square or even close, like multiple degrees off. It's a scam market in a lot of ways. Like, and even when you buy a lot of these accessories, they're wildly overpriced. They're poorly made, not well thought out. It's pretty tough.
I really love the one where you had to use repair the thermocouple to get the heater working again, or the AC or something. So you figured out the multimeter, right, and you figured out the resistance of the thing and just put a dumb resistor in it to get the friggin' thing working again.
Yeah, that actually cost us hundreds of dollars. Like, we went to dealers and they ran all these diagnostic tests and, you know, all that crap, but none of it ever panned out. And then I was like, well, this is certainly the problem. This is what the computer is telling me. The computer is giving me an error message. It's giving me effectively a very bad stack trace. And it's pretty clear what the issue is. So I'm just going to do the thing that makes sense and replace this with a resistor, because that's all it is, really. And it worked. Honestly, that's kind of my approach to a lot of dev things too. It's just like, look at what the computer is telling you. It's not lying. Usually.
It's an expensive resistor, though.
The actual replacement part was, I think, $40, $70, something like that. But, you know, a resistor is a couple cents.
That's right. Awesome. So you kind of buried the lead on this a little bit, but you've also got a project that you've been working on recently that we've been hearing a lot about. And it's been really fascinating to watch you develop it and the process and just the questions and stuff you've been asking. It's been really interesting thinking about all these problems you had to solve. So tell us a little bit about what the heck you've got going on over there in your workshop.
Yeah, absolutely. So So what I do for my day job is pretty standard web dev stuff, both front end and back end, just kind of whatever needs to happen, whatever the project needs are. But in my spare time, what I really like doing, what I'm super passionate about, is making video games. I really enjoyed playing video games as a kid. I don't so much now, just because of guilt, but there's something about the medium that really attracts me. And I've been working on your cat's cracking me up. I've been working on making games for about the last decade. I've only ever officially released one, which is on Steam. It's a VR game called Microcosm, and it's not a game really. It's more of a drawing tool. So it's voxels, just three-dimensional pixels that you draw, and you can select colors and lighting and transparency and stuff. So you can create little worlds. I'm a big fan of Minecraft. I've spent a disgusting amount of time playing that game. And so Microcosm was a pretty natural thing for me. I got a VR headset back when the HTC Vive first came out, and it just kind of grabbed me. So I was like, I have to make this thing. So I made that. It took a month and a half of nights and weekends or whatever, and I released it. I haven't really touched it in a few years because, well, I lived in a van, and it's hard to work on VR games in a van, it turns out. Although I went in with the best of intentions. I even bought this domain name, VRRV, verve.com, and I don't think I even have it anymore, but the idea was it was a virtual reality game studio that was based out of an RV. But what was I even thinking? It's ridiculous on its face. So nothing really happened in the 2 years we were on the game front, because I was all about VR at the time. But the project I'm working on now is a multiplayer game. It is a real-time action game. So, you know, things are moving around, players are moving around quickly. You see them all moving in real time. It's built in Unity. And the idea is you are a little spaceship and you have to do things. So there are different game modes. The first one that I've implemented is collecting rings to score points. And this all came out of a game that I released 4 years ago, just before we moved into the van, actually, around the same time I was working on Microcosm, called Booster's Day Out, which was for Ludum Dare or Ludum Dare, depending on who you ask. And what that is a competition where so on Friday at 6 p.m., Ludum Dare announces a theme, right? And that theme could be pretty much anything. One of mine was, for Booster, it was a small world. And for the other Ludum Dare I participated in, it was a, what was the theme for that? Running out of space, I believe. So you just take that theme that you find out at Friday on 6 p.m. and you have 48 hours until Sunday at 6 p.m. to make a video game based somehow around that theme. And it doesn't, like, people aren't super strict about it, right? Like, the theme is really just intended as a constraint, as inspiration. But so for a small world. For a small world, I made Booster, and the idea was that you were a little rocket, you would fly around, and it's orbital mechanics, but just in two dimensions. So it's the same basic math as something like Kerbal Space Program, except way simpler to control, because when you remove a dimension, you're not just removing one complexity, you're removing a whole ridiculous amount of complexity, right?
Sure. It's like Lunar Lander.
Yeah, pretty much. And the idea this is originally a browser game, right? So the idea wasn't necessarily to make it into a mobile game, but it turns out if you have a rocket and it's only moving in two dimensions, you really only need three buttons for it, which is kind of the same control scheme as something like Downwell, which is a iOS game I absolutely love.
I've been playing What the Golf, too, on the Apple Arcade, and they have a bunch of levels there where you're shooting golf balls around planets, trying to get, you know, like you said, use those 2D orbital mechanics to kind of slingshot around things and get a freaking golf ball in the hole, and the thing's taunting you the whole time. It's frustrating and fun.
I love that game. It's so good. The sense of humor is fantastic. The art is really good. It's simple, but it's solid and consistent. It's astounding.
Lots of good little references in there too.
Yeah. Really, really solid game. So that's what Booster is. And that's like 4 years of me mostly not working on it, but kind of working on it on and off. Eventually I was like, well, this works as an iOS game because the control scheme is pretty simple. And then I was like, well, it's not really fun right now. It's just a game concept. So what can I do to add on to that? And I landed on multiplayer, seeing the success of, you know, iOS multiplayer games as well as battle royale games on desktop, which I personally really enjoy. Just being able to get into a game really quick and play with friends or play with whoever and just have a good time. I just want to make stuff that people love using, you know?
And you did this in Unity. So, like bringing it over to the iOS platform is like not a big deal, right? From the web.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was like one weekend of work to get it building on iOS and with touch controls built in and all that. It's very simple. Unity makes, I don't want to be an apologist for Unity because they have a lot of problems. They have a lot of problems, but they do make it pretty astoundingly easy to make a video game. Like when you think about it, at least for me growing up, I never thought I would be able to make a video game. I never even really thought I would be able to program computers because it just seems so big and so complex. But Unity feels in so many ways to me the same way I felt when I discovered Photoshop as a kid. You know, I was like 9, 10 years old and I got a copy of Photoshop from my dad's work that there was an old version, right? And suddenly all of these things that I saw online that I knew existed and knew humans did, like I understood that humans made these things, but suddenly it was clear to me how I couldn't me human could make them, right? And that was just so empowering, and I find Unity much the same.
That's cool. I've messed around it for a very, very tiny amount of time, and actually I was struck by not so much even the ability to make games, because I'm not super interested in that, but more the ability to write code for like the 3D or like 2.5D space, like user interfaces, visualizations, you know, just kind of unique ways of like organizing things that, you know, like interacting with an interface in a way that I wasn't used to before. It's not the web and it's not a, you know, .NET WinForm, right? Like those are really old two things. And maybe like iOS, right? But being able to actually like work with, you know, gravity and stuff in code it's really mind boggling. Like you said, like the Photoshop thing, it's almost a literal blank canvas. Like there's just so much you can do. Yeah, I get it.
It's an incredible creative tool. I can't recommend it enough. It's kind of amazing what you can do with no Unity knowledge and, you know, an hour or two in a tutorial. Just going from literally not knowing anything about making video games to having a cube with physics even is just such a cool feeling. And I love your point about not necessarily using it for game development. Because I think that adding that literally dimensionality to user interfaces can be super empowering for users. MetaLab has actually done some work with that, with embedding three-dimensional views into iOS apps. We have some clients that have done things with planning out like construction and that sort of thing. So they're able to easily visualize, and it's three-dimensional stuff is incredible. It's not just for video games. It is absolutely something that can be used in many, many apps. Some of our interfaces even use three-dimensional things for showing the world and where network traffic is hot, or it's incredible. It's such a powerful tool.
That's cool. So you've got Booster, you did Ludum Dare. This thing's been marinating for 4 years, and then 2020 happens.
Actually, first of all, let me talk a little bit about the DNC Discord, because I have some criticisms of the show. I think you don't hype the Discord enough. You guys got to be hyping this thing. It's amazing. It's an incredible resource. We have so many brilliant people in here who are willing to chat and share their experience. We got to get everybody in this Discord. It's the best Discord.
Okay, criticism noted. It has been growing a lot in the past couple of weeks. We've got a lot of people joining. It's been awesome. Some of them are here hanging out, watching the show tonight. We'll put a link. The problem with the Discord is we don't have a catchy link for it. Really, that's our fault. We should just be dnc.show/something catchy.
slash Discord.
Instead we've got random garbage letters after a discord.gg. I don't know what country that's from, but
I'm reading this from Wikipedia right now. .gg is the country code top level domain for the bailiwick of Guernsey.
There you go.
That's just what it says on the internet. I can't vouch for it.
It must be true. Yes, come by the Discord. We'll post a link in the show notes, and we'll mention this again at the end, as we always do. It is an awesome resource, and I'm learning a lot. It's my new lazy resource for I need a quick recommendation for something that I want from people I kind of sort of trust. It's good for that.
Nice. What was the question?
How did you get from there to here with Booster?
What made me think of the Discord then?
I don't know. You just started ranting, man. You just laid into me.
Okay. I wish we could go back and listen to that.
I was trying to pivot to 2020 happened.
Yes, 2020. Yeah.
Okay.
So getting back to the question, 2020 happened, and I personally have found the lack of social obligation very freeing. It's been super helpful for me in my side projects. I'm just able to focus more. I'm not an incredibly social person, generally speaking. So it's been nice for me. Last year, I finished up a big electronics project that had been plaguing me for literally years, since the first job Sean and I had together, even. And this year, I don't know. Honestly, I hope in many ways certain things. There are obviously a lot of very bad things about what has happened over the last year. But in many ways, I hope some things kind of don't go back. For example, commutes. A lot fewer people are commuting now. And I think that is a giant positive, both in terms of the resources used to move those people around every day, as well as the time for those people. Commutes for me have always been a giant thorn in my side, and I'm very, very happy not to have one anymore. I one of the biggest reasons that I always wanted to work remotely is in fact due to the lack of commute. And that's something I really pushed for, and one of the reasons I wanted to be at MetaLab.
Yeah, we're super lucky in our profession to be able to have done that for years, and will continue to be able to do it. Like it's much more normalized now, I think, which makes it that much easier. I mean, I haven't gone to an office since 2014. Yeah, so it's been, like, you know, 5 or 6 years. So, yeah, I definitely thrive in this environment. I do miss having the sort of break between, you know, home and work, the sort of physical separation and the time separation. But, like, that's just on me. I could put in habits in place to, like, improve that. We've talked about that on the show in the past, and something I still struggle with. But, you know, definitely more pros than cons.
Yeah, it's been incredible for me. So I my commute now is I switch a USB-C cable from one laptop to the other laptop, which is great. Like I absolutely love that. And I'm not saying I immediately start working on side projects when I get off work, right? I go eat dinner.
That actually works. Nothing breaks.
Yeah, dude, it's amazing. So I can talk about my setup a little bit if you want.
You're a USB-C unicorn as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Okay. So USB-C was really transformative for me in the van because we wanted to reduce our reliance on AC power as much as possible, right? Because we're storing everything in DC. And if we transfer it back to AC, that's even best case, that's 10% or so, 5-10% loss, right? It's just a lot of waste. And of course you're working with a limited power supply. You need to conserve everything you can. So I actually just had 12 volt outlets throughout the van, and I probably would have done this at 48 volt if it was a custom build, but it was a pre-built. So it was 12 volt and I took what I could and added what I could. But USB-C was amazing. You can just buy 12 volt car adapters for USB-C devices that'll pump out, you know, 60, 80 watts, and that you can charge, you can run your laptop off it all day. I never turned the inverter on to run my laptop when I was working, for example. So I'm a huge fan and huge advocate for USB-C as a charging technology in particular.
Everything in the ham radio world is 12 volts too. So I've got, like I said, a box of 12 volt wall warts in case I need them, all different barrel sizes, power pole connectors. You ever use power poles for anything?
I don't think so.
There are these great DC connectors that are sort of modular, and they come in different sizes for different amperages, and they're really easy to build yourself. And you can even, like, they're normally, you know, just red and black two contacts, but you can kind of stack them to make like a 2x2 or like a 3x2, or, you know, you can do all kinds of crazy stuff. And they're really popular in ham radio circles and in RC, like car and plane circles. Like, they're just good battery DC connectors for that.
That's cool, man. It's amazing to me how hard it is to find a good connector. Like, I actually have a big bag of they're yellow connectors, and they're like flat on one side and it's 45 degree angles on the other side.
Like a spade and a, like a socket kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know the name for the connector. Anyway, I think they're well-liked throughout the RC community, which is how I found them. But in my experience, they're very, very difficult to connect and disconnect. Like, you have to pull really hard. Mm-hmm. And it's just not like, especially for power, you don't want to be yanking on those things. So I don't love it.
I'll send you a link, put in the show notes. Anderson Power Poles. A little pricey, a little tricky to do. Well, once you do it a few times, they're great, man. Put them on everything.
Beautiful.
So USB-C power, but you've also got the USB-C, the one plug, the mythical one plug setup.
Yeah, so when I switch back to a normal kind of office desk setup, I really wanted to just have one USB-C. It just felt great to just have one USB-C. So now I have a CalDigit dock, which I believe is the same one that Mr. Washington has. And basically just a USB-C cable runs from that into my laptop, and it provides power. And also it delivers the video out to my monitor, which is on an arm. And my various USB hubs scattered about this room behind me. So I've got a hub behind me on the bench for the printer and just whatever I need to connect for debugging. I've got another hub over here for my Windows computer. I've got a switch so I can switch my audio interface between my Mac and my Windows computers. And it's great. All of it is just through one cable. It's really fantastic. It's kind of the dream, right? It's very close to that idea that we've seen over the years where you just kind of slot your phone into the side of a monitor or whatever. It's pretty much that, but just with my laptops.
The naked robotic core, as Syracuse calls it. Yeah, docking stations. Everything old is new again, basically. I remember we had these like Gateway Solo laptops, and they had this huge like 100-pin docking station connector on the bottom with these little flimsy like bay doors that would open up, and you freaking kerchunk that thing on there and get some more ports. Those are the days, man.
Yeah, you get your serial and VGA ports then, right?
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny because I think the Gateway Solos had those. Like, it had parallel. I think it had serial.
it had a parallel port in a laptop?
I am almost certain the Gateway Solo 2000 laptop.
That is pretty beautiful. I worked in IT for about 6 years before I switched over to dev, and we were a Dell shop, and the laptops had those same kind of just gigantic, I don't even know what the name for them is, but those huge ports along the bottom. It took up half the width of the laptop, and you'd plug it in, you'd get your couple extra ports, and that was a docking station. And now it's so much more integrated. It really is kind of amazing.
Now it's just a really, 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 really fast serial port.
Right. It's funny how far we've come and how much everything has not changed at all.
It's funny, actually. I've been working on restoring this IBM 5155 in the back here. Restoring meaning it functionally works, but it just needs a little TLC to get it really working well. And I want to somehow interface, like use the terminal on like DOS 3.10 and like somehow like get a terminal and like do some work on it. So I actually bought a like new old stock serial card, ISA or whatever. I don't even know what the socket is, but I just bought a serial card off eBay for $20. So I'm going to try to get it wired up.
That's so cool. I love that you can still get new old stock of that.
Yeah, dude, it was like some guy's like, I found this in my basement. It was like in perfect condition. He even sent it in an ESD bag. Like, awesome.
That's awesome. Amazing. Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to hearing about that. I love that little computer from what you've shown. That's a classic right there. That's super cool.
So, trying to bring this ship around here, because we're trying to talk about Booster.
Oh yeah, nobody cares about that video game.
I care, Paul.
Booster's big neighborhood. Okay, so we've already established it's in Unity. It's a multiplayer game. I haven't really talked about the multiplayer tech side of things, though. So, yeah, that would be a good thing to get into.
You mentioned the multiplayer and, like, the ability to get into the game as quickly as possible, right? Like, you literally launch the game and just hit play, and you're playing with someone somewhere, right?
Yeah, so that's something I've spent a lot of time thinking about. Since this is an indie game launch that I'm just setting up, there's no corporate backing or anything like that. This is just something I'm doing myself. I understand all too well that it's going to be basically impossible. So kind of in order to give myself the best shot at this, what I've actually done for the initial launch, coming April 23rd, if I say that publicly, I have to do it. So I'm going to say it publicly.
You heard it here first.
The official launch coming April 23rd. I'm actually sending a notification to a Discord bot via webhook. Or a notification to Discord via webhook whenever somebody starts a game. So if I'm not working, I can actually see that and hop online and play with that person so they have a good first run experience.
We'll put the army of Discord people on it to just hop on a game if they have time.
Yeah, I would very much appreciate that, actually. We do have a Discord. I have a Discord set up for Booster, which if you would not mind putting in show notes, I certainly would appreciate. And anybody's welcome. I'm kind of talking a little bit about the development process, sharing just the BS that comes up as I develop the application, screenshots, little videos, fun stuff.
Live blog.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a Tumblr for 2021.
Tumblr still exists, you know.
Does it? I'm pretty sure they went out of business. But what actually is happening behind the scenes is I'm using a service called Photon, Photon Pun, P-U-N, which actually originally stood for Photon Unity Networking, but I think is now a backronym to only be just Photon Pun. They provide all the servers and stuff for the multiplayer networking, and they provide client libraries that allow you to easily talk to those servers and authenticate with those servers. And then on the other side of that, I am using Firebase. Firebase I chose because I'm familiar with setting up their auth. It was pretty easy for me. It's very flexible. So I have Apple and Google and email auth set up right now. But it would be really easy for me to add, let's say I wanted to add GitHub auth to my video game. I could do that in just a few minutes. It would mostly be UI work, right? So that would be something that could be easily done very quickly if needed, or something more realistic like phone auth. Google just handles all the SMS stuff. I don't have to worry about it. I just pay them a little bit. It's pretty great. So it's Photon that actually handles the networking, the real-time networking side, and then Firebase, which is handling the authentication and storage of analytics data and anything that is a little bit longer lived than just messages being passed back and forth for the position of every entity in a game, right?
Well, how do you get the real time, like when you're in a game, there's some way to like coordinate that. Like, what does that netcode look like? Is that part of Photon, or do you do that yourself, or what?
Yeah, all the netcode goes through Photon. What's really cool about them is they have servers everywhere. They're just like a CDN or anything else, where you have servers in South Africa and in China, and for China you actually have to do some special stuff. But US West and US East and all the things you would expect. I'm supporting like I think 13 of those regions out of the box, and all I have to do is call connect and tell it the region that I want to connect to, or say auto connect, and then it figures it out based on ping. I didn't have to write any of that stuff. But once you're actually in a game, it's pretty much just normal Unity code. So you'll have an object, but instead of inheriting from mono behavior, it'll inherit from mono behavior pun, photon unity networking. And that gives you methods to call like an RPC, which will be sent to every instance of that object within the room, for example. So yeah, all the actual gameplay stuff happens within Photon. But then where Firebase comes into play is the auth side. And the auth side is pretty, like, mostly what you'd expect, right? It's authentication. But then what I actually do is when I log into Photon, I pass along the JWT I get from Firebase. Photon receives that JWT, hits a Firebase function that I have, which verifies that JWT and actually tells Photon this person is who they claim to be, which means from that point, anything that happens in Photon, I can trust that that actually is an authenticated action by that user, right? Which is really critical. It kind of sounds like nothing, but it's actually extremely critical for a multiplayer game. So from that point, I can anything is trustable, which is huge. I just said the same thing like 10 times.
That's just wild that you don't have to people make their entire careers of writing net code and you just freaking slap on a parent class and away you go.
Well, that's one of my two big fears about this game is that the net code sucks and I need to rewrite everything, which is hopefully not true because Photon is an established company. There are a lot of production games that are running on their code. I think that's going to be fine. My second big fear about this game, and my actual real fear about this game, is that it's just not fun. That I've spent 4 years of my life, not continuously, but 4 years of my life with it in the background of my head, right? Working on this thing that just sucks. It's not fun. And so I'm hoping within the next week or two, I will actually have a couple friends on and we'll do some matches and, you know, see what it's like. But it's rough because there's not a way for me to validate that until I put in a ton of work.
Yeah. And also keeping in mind that the success of the game is not necessarily, it's not an indicator of whether or not it's fun, right? Like it could be fun, but for like a small core group of like hardcore players or something, right? Like that's not, it's going to be really hard to measure that unless, I don't know, without getting some feedback.
Yeah, I'm trying to develop this out in the open as much as possible. Developing the open is like a thing that people talk about now. And I don't know, I've kind of always tried to run my projects like that. But I think the tools that we have to do that, like Discord, actually, I'm going to talk about Discord bots a little bit more. I should do that in just a moment. But the tools we have now are just so much better than anything that has existed up until this point. You really can develop things in the open in a safe and I hope sustainable way.
One more question about the netcode piece. So there's no servers for this game. Like Photon is more or less serverless, right? You don't have to manage any metal there. And Firebase obviously is, you know, you're just calling functions or just functions, Paul. So like you don't have to manage any infrastructure there. So is there any, like when you join a game, where's the game server, you know?
I don't know. Yeah, it is all serverless. It's just magic that happens. Somebody else is managing it. I'm paying them to manage it.
And so like one of the clients like becomes the master or whatever, like they kind of control the match, like the source of truth or something like that.
Yeah, that's correct. So everything does pass through Photon servers. So it is not truly peer-to-peer.
Interesting. Okay.
However, in the way that they have things set up, a client is designated what they call the master, and that client doesn't actually get any new responsibilities inherently. It only inherits responsibilities based on what you code. So in your code, you check Photon network is master client, and then you do some logic. And the way I am trying to handle that personally is that every event that happens in the game still gets sent to every single client, not just the master. And every client reacts appropriately, except they don't send their own events back out.
Interesting.
So that way, if the master client disconnects, everybody still has the same information. And whoever is elected, the next time something has to happen, that check for is master client will be true. And they will just do the thing since they already have the info. There's no handoff.
Everything just kept in sync, and then Photon decides who the master is, and it could just change at any time. That's wild. So Discord bots.
Yeah. This okay. So this was admittedly a little bit of a lark. I try to focus on what does the user need, right? MVP in my mind is what does the user actually absolutely need to use this application and be like, wow, what an amazing time I had using that application. I have to use it again because it was great. This is definitely not that. This is absolutely not that. This was kind of just fun, but also, you know, you hope that anything you release does kind of become a little bit viral. It's always possible these days. And this is why I'm also supporting all the Photon regions, right? Because I don't know, a lot of developers have had success in unexpected regions. And if that's already available to me, it seems silly not to take advantage of it, right? So I feel very much the same here.
Especially for a game that is literally just flying around and has almost no like textual components to the game, right? It's or any cultural like reference to anything, right? Everyone gets flying a spaceship around planets.
I hope so. That's something I'm really trying for. I at one point I had in my notes that there shouldn't be any text in the game, which I gave
I
up
love
on.
That idea.
I gave up on, but like I wanted it to be something that that a child could pick, like a child who can't read yet could pick up, because I really want to make this sort of digital toy.
I'm getting Journey vibes from the way you're describing it.
Right. I actually haven't played Journey, but I know what you're talking about. I've read some interviews and stuff. That is absolutely in a similar vein. So the Discord bot, here's what it does. At the moment, whenever somebody joins a match, creates a new match, I'm notified. I can join in if I need to. But then beyond that, I can send it a couple commands. So I can ask who's online, and I can ask how many matches have been played in the last 24 hours. So it's like bang BBN online now, or bang BBN matches played, something like, I don't remember the command. Thankfully the Discord bot has a help command, so I can find all these things out just by asking it. But basically I didn't really want to build an admin interface, and this kind of ties back into me not wanting to set up backends for this, right? Like I don't want this to be a thing that I have to manage that can break, and then I'm the person who gets paged and has to fix it. Because I just can't. Like I have a day job, right? I have a real job that I have to do during the day, and that's just not feasible. So kind of taking that serverless stuff to the next level, I don't want to host an admin UI. So what I've done instead is set up this Discord bot that allows me to just kind of query things as needed. So the online now command looks at all the regions that I have enabled. It goes through, actually sets up a Photon client that connects to each one of those and iterates over them. And when you connect to Photon, you get some results back, like the number of players on that server, on that region, and the number of active rooms, all that sort of junk, you know? So I just store that, immediately disconnect, and then iterate, jump to the next room and do that, you know, 13, 14 times. And then spit a Discord message back. One of my favorite things about the whole bot is that if you try to send that online now command multiple times in a row while it's still fetching, while it's still reading from the regions, it gives you a snarky message back. So hold your horses. Give me a second. I'm only human.
Definitely a thing a human would say.
I'm only human. But yeah, I've been super impressed with the Discord API itself. Is extremely functional. Like it does everything you need it to do, not functional in the programming sense. But in addition to that, there is a wonderful library called discord.js that is what I'm using, because I'm just programming in Node, right? This is Firebase Functions. So it's the path of least resistance to just make things in Node. And Discord.js is absolutely fantastic. Not only is it a great API and a great service, but their documentation is outstanding. I think they've really locked in their target audience. A lot of people building Discord bots maybe haven't done a lot of programming before, and the docs explain how to get node setup on your local system, how to work with environment variables, how to do all these kind of fundamental things that you really need to do in order to deploy anything to any sort of real audience, and are just often totally left out of all the documentation. So I've been wildly impressed with Discord.js. One thing is that it kind of makes it a little bit hard to read if you already know that stuff. Like, you have to skip through a lot of things, but I read through it all because I was just fascinated, because this never happens. It never, ever happens in dev, and it's so disappointing, and I love to see it. I'm very happy to click next to skip through things I already know. I would much rather it be there for people who need it.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, every Discord admin has some kind of bot, and I'm sure that the accessibility of the API and the tools to do that really, you know, catalyze the creation of that. I mean, my first bot was an IRC bot in visualbasic.net. You know, I had to write my own IRC client and parser and do all that whole thing. And it was kind of cool because it had it could hot load functions or like DLLs. So I had an interface to the bot where I could respond to messages, and it had a file system watcher, so it would watch like a directory for like anything with a .cs, you know, C# source code. And when you hit save, the file system watcher would trigger. It would use the .NET like reflection to compile the DLL, and it would load it in real time without the bot having to disconnect. That was like, and it had a little icon in the system tray that would show it was like loading and then done. That was maybe my crowning achievement as a Visual Basic developer. It's really cool.
That's so cool. I just love the idea of kids working with the Discord API right now and having these stories in 20 years or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's the same stuff, man.
It's
same
amazing. Stuff. So cool. I love that, how cyclical it is.
The only Discord bot I made was a countdown timer to the release date of No Man's Sky in that aged like milk. So,
oh, brutal.
Yeah.
That game turned out great, though, after a couple of years of updates.
That's what I hear. I got to pick it up again, especially now that it has a VR sports, but it's really good.
Supposedly, they have real multiplayer now, too.
About time, Sean. Not you, Sean. The other Sean. Whatever that guy's name was. Anyway, it's really interesting having the bot be your primary admin interface into a thing. I mean, we're so used to working with command lines, and the bot is just another command line, right? Like, it's just cloud functions instead of, bash functions or shell scripting or whatever. So, like, so much more powerful and accessible, and do it on your phone, do it on your computer. Like, you could check it anywhere. It can notify you. Like, how hard is it to even just wire up your own? Like, I want to push notification to my phone when something happens. You go down the rabbit hole of like Twilio or like using some kind of like AWS has their own terrible, you know, SNS thing for pushing inexplicable messages to email and SMS and stuff. But like, Just send a message to my bot. Like, I have Discord on. Like, it's so easy to get a push notification. So, like, having that kind of cycle, I mean, the more I talk about it, the more appealing it seems to be to actually, like, design things this way. It's just so minimal, and you just get what you need. That and maybe, like, a Grafana dashboard, and, like, that's, you know, what more do you need?
You could really get a lot done with that, yeah. It's... The webhook side of Discord, which is all, you don't need to set up a whole bot in order to just send messages to a channel when something happens. If all you want to do is receive an event from whatever and post it to a Discord, you can just use their webhooks, which are, you can do it directly from the Discord client app. It's fantastic. Super easy to set up. That was the first part I set up, and that's the part that alerts me when somebody creates a new game. No bot involved. It's just a post. And Discord.js also has a wrapper around that, which makes it like two lines. It's beautiful.
So April 23rd, we're going to hold you to that.
Yeah, please do. So April 23rd, I think, like I said, is the 4-year anniversary of the initial release of Booster as a 48-hour game. And now it's a 4-year game. So I really hope it's fun. I really hope people like it. I'm going to keep working on it really hard until then.
What's left to do?
Oh, Jiminy Christmas.
For like finishing touches.
What is left to do? I've got all the auth stuff in place. I've got most of the logging in place. I need to figure out what I'm doing for leaderboards. So I have all this data, right? And I just have this fire hose of data every single event that happens in every single match. And I need to turn that into something that's digestible for the client again, in terms of aggregate stats. I need to add radar. So when a ring that you need to collect is off screen, there's a little dingus that points to it on the side of your screen.
Yep.
That already exists for planets, just because it's necessary to control how the camera moves. But I need to add it for rings and other objectives. I probably just need to abstract the whole thing into like a radar, and you just specify types of things you want to track. Man, that's about it. Like a whole bunch of UI. I've been doing UI design. I need to actually implement, which is going to be that's going to be a lost weekend. But
and then this is going to be on what, test flight for iOS?
This will be on test flight. Absolutely. Come by the Discord, the DNC Discord. I will be posting about it there 100%. But then, yeah, it's going to be released on iOS first, and then hopefully within the next month or two after release, I'll get Android out as well.
Sweet.
It mostly works. I just don't want to... It just seems too risky to try to release both at the same time to me. And iOS is my home platform, so...
I'm excited to play it, too. Like, it does sound like fun. Just a little time waster, and... look forward to helping out, get those not conversions, they're kind of like conversions, it's like getting two people to meet up. That's gonna be fun to see that grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if it's not successful, I'll have learned a ridiculous amount from setting this up. I'd never done anything like multiplayer networked video games or even releasing a video game with this much UI polish and what I'm putting into it is going to be a huge experience for me. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on again for the 133rd time. Do you have any other stuff on the web you want to plug? Is there a site for Booster? Do you have some personal sites, Twitters, whatevers to shout out?
Yeah, I'm Paul Straw pretty much anywhere. So Twitter, Instagram, just search on Google for Paul Straw. You'll probably find me. That's about it. Come join the Discord, mostly. It's a strong community, and people are answering questions, having fun. You should be there.
I love all the different viewpoints, too, because we have this kind of common thread of, kind of techie, nerdy people, but so many different backgrounds, so much different tech, so many different experiences, experience levels, like sizes of companies. I mean, Thomas works for Microsoft, and I'm like in the basement in my underwear, right? Like by myself and two other people. So like, and everything in between, so it is really, really fun. I mean, it's literally my social hangout now. Like that's it. That and my, high school friends. And that's it.
Totally. It's been great. I can't recommend it enough, although I think I may have recommended it too much during this episode, but come join us.
Awesome. As always, we love your feedback, likes, shares, rates, comments, subscribes, thumbs up, whatever. You can send us feedback on Twitter, DNCcast, Sean is Sean Washbot, I am Shrockwell, and Paul, I assume, is Paul Straw.
That's the one.
That's pretty good. Like, does not seem like it would be an uncommon name, but you just seem to have grabbed it everywhere, huh?
I had, going back to Tumblr, back in the Tumblr days, there was one guy who was also named Paul Straw who was real mad about me having that domain. But yeah, mostly scot-free.
Finders keepers. As always, you'll find the show notes on dnc.show. We've got a lot of show notes. We'll post links to all the stuff that we've mentioned. And we are streaming on Twitch normally, twitch.tv/DNCcast, Thursday night, 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern. I didn't make it this week. We had technical difficulties. Sean was not here to save us. So we actually had to hang out in our Discord, which, by the way, come by the Discord. We'll put a link in the show notes. You might have heard about it once or twice. Come on by. We would love to have you. And that's all that I have to say, Paul. Thanks for coming on, man. This is really good. I've been really wanting to hear a lot about Booster and everything. I mean, we've been seeing the development in the Discord, but to kind of hear about all the nitty gritty, I think is awesome. So thanks a lot. I hope this is fun for you to get back on the air.
Yeah, this was a blast. I'd love to come back a little bit closer to launch and kind of talk about that a little bit. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I think that would be an awesome retrospective, definitely. See you later, man.
Bye. Bye.